nation. The hobby is the people. Weekly news and interviews. It's your number one source. Sports Card Nation. The hobby is the people. Sports Card Nation.
Card Nation.
Episode
95. What is up? Welcome to episode 95. We have a different sort of show today. We still have an interview guest. Nothing's changed there. But for the first time ever, I can say I know the interview guest all my life. Can't say that all the time. And so joining me on today's show, my own father, Barry Newman. It's weird even saying his name like that. I just call him Pops or Dad, but his name is Barry Newman. He's going to be on the show today. He's 82 years young. He grew up in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. I'm also from Brooklyn, but he was there a lot longer than me. And, you know, he grew up in the heydays of the 40s and 50s. He pretty much lived in Ebbets Field and got to mingle with those Dodgers and had autographs and shook hands and collected cards back then. And he's, you know, we've talked obviously off the air about it, but really not. We wound up talking more about it during this interview, and it was really refreshing. I probably should have had him come on the show sooner. He's sort of a shy guy, believe it or not. You never know it by observing me, but really kind of quiet guy, and I know he enjoyed it. I know when we were done doing it, he couldn't thank me enough. He gets emotional during the interview. I'll give you a heads up. He chokes up more than once in reminiscing back to the heydays of the 40s and 50s, and he talks about the Dodgers, what they meant to Brooklyn, what they did with their cards back then. When the Dodgers left Brooklyn in 1957, and what it did to that city. And so it's sort of a trip back in time, not to be dramatic, but it really was. It was really fun to do. I hope you enjoy it. I know he's not a celebrity in the hobby per se, but he really brings us back to a time in the hobby and a time in history that we all only know from reading about things, most of us anyway, unless we have a relative that shares those stories. And so I wanted him to share some of those stories with you as well. I think you'll enjoy him. He's 82 years old, as I said, or young. He's a drummer, and he still plays in three bands at 82. God bless him. He loves to play the drums. He's self-taught and was quite a ball player. You'll hear him talk a little bit about that. He was quite a baseball player back in his day. He traveled the five boroughs on a travel team, and he was a center fielder. He's going to tell you what number he wore and why he wore it as well. I don't want to give that away, but he'll mention that during the interview. I turned out to be a pretty good baseball player, played in high school, still play competitive softball. My son turned out to be a pretty good ball player. So we have sort of a baseball gene, but we're not going to talk too much about his baseball playing days himself. We're going to talk about Brooklyn during the heyday with the Brooklyn Dodgers, what those guys were like in person, what cards were like back then and comparative to now. And so it was great having my dad on. I think it'll be one of those interviews that many years from now, I'm sure I'll look back and fondly and glad I did it. And, full credit, I know Dr. Beckett on the Sports Card Insights, he's had his parents on, and, I took inspiration for sure in that, and made me, I might have did it anyway, but it really made me think about it sooner, and got me off my butt to get my dad to do it. And he was nervous at first, but then excited. And it's funny, when we were done, he couldn't thank me enough, and was really happy to kind of go back. I think it was sort of nice for him to kind of go back to a fond time in his own memories and reminisce as well. And so I hope you appreciate him sharing that, and you know, give us some feedback. You know, my dad's a real sensitive guy, and he cares, and you know, tell us what you think, what you thought of what he said, what you thought of him. And really, you know, I ask for feedback every show, obviously, but really would like to hear what you think of you know, having my dad on. I think one of the reasons I sort of even delayed having my dad on is the, you know, the whole perception, oh, you know, John had his father on. You know, my son Jordan was on the NFL draft show over a year ago. And so, you know, I don't always like having, let's say, relatives on, if you will. I mean, it's easy kind of to do. But I thought this was good. It played well, and it was, I really enjoyed it. He really enjoyed it. Let me know, let us know what you think yourself. Maybe me and my dad enjoyed it more than you will, but let us know either way. So without any further delay, let's get this thing going. Time for this week's
incoming
product releases. All right, 7 releases this week, starting with today. If you're listening to this show on show release day, 2020 Panini Absolute Football. And then nothing of significance to the 30th. And all of these that I'm about to mention are on September 30th. 2020 TriStar Hidden Treasures Autograph Footballs. 2020-21 Upper Deck Artifacts Hockey. 2019-20 Panini Encased Basketball. 2020 Topps Triple Treads Baseball. 2020 Topps Baseball, the complete sets that you find in usually the retail. And then last but not least, 2020-21 Topps NHL Sticker Collection. So there's your rundown. Gets us right through September and into October.
Sports Card Nation Podcast is your weekly hobby and sports podcast. Now on tons of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and many more. Listen to in 44 different countries globally, Sports Card Nation is one of the most interactive podcasts around, providing great content, giveaways, and some of the hobby's best interview guests without time constraints. Thousands can't be wrong. We want to thank all the wonderful listeners around the world, our awesome guests on the show, and our tremendous sponsors making us what we are today. Remember, without you, there's no us.
It's time for What's Cracking. So I got 3 boxes of the Topps Archive Snapshots, the online exclusive. I got them for being a Montgomery 582 member, not for free, but was allotted to buy 3 at $25 a piece. I've never opened the Archive Snapshots before. I know this isn't the first year of them, you know, $25, 12 cards, 1 black and white or colored parallel, 1 autograph per box. I figured it was worth the flyer. I got the 3 a few days ago. I opened the 1. My auto was Hunter Harvey, rookie auto. My black and white was Ruben Sierra, but there was also a Luis Robert rookie in that pack, and that's going for about $25 on its own. So can't complain. I stopped there. I kept the other 2 closed, probably for resale purposes. And then they opened it up for, you know, you can buy it as a regular person, and I got 3 more boxes. So I got 3 more boxes coming, so it'll be 5 sealed. As you know, if you follow the show or how I do stuff, I like to keep stuff closed. I don't think this particular product is going to be one that appreciates a whole heck of a lot. They're going between 40 and $50 on the secondary market, and I think it's going to be one of those products that's sort of going to be where it settles in at. But you never know. Again, rookies drive products. It is, you know, Luis Robert, Lux, those sort of guys are in there. So you never know. I'm going to keep probably a few closed, probably move a few that pays, you know, to pay for all six. And, you know, again, I like to do that. I've really cut down on my wax consumption. First there was Rally, then Collectible came on the scene, and now we have a third entry into the fractional shares stock market type of sports card end of the hobby. This company called Ault, A-L-T. They are owned by Lior Avidar. He is a businessman, an entrepreneur, an investor. You may not recognize the name under normal circumstances, but in the hobby, he's famously known as the gentleman who bought that LeBron logo man, and then subsequently just purchased the Giannis 101 logo man that beat out the LeBron. He's the owner of both of those cards. Both of those cards will be in the Ault vault, as he says. And Ault is a not so much like a fractional shares, but like a stock market. You can bid on cards that are in the vault. It's kind of, you know, goes up and down like the stock market. Obviously, you make money if you sell what you own, at its high points, and you lose if you don't sell on its high points. And brand new, throwing his name, company in the ring. He's very successful, so he has a track record of successful businesses. He obviously has the capital behind the company, and they're going to be launching October 1st. So a few days away here, week away. And again, not a bad start with that vault with those two huge basketball cards, and both 101s, to reinforce what they're doing. I'll have to take a look at it. I've participated in Rally and Collectible. I'm not sure. I can't participate in everything, but definitely going to give Ault a look-see and see what that's all about. Speaking of money, let's talk about Golden Auctions. They're on some kind of streak. They have recently signed Cal Ripken Jr., Hall of Famer, to auction off a lot of mementos from his career, including a truck he was awarded for a league award, his Little League jersey, and a lot of other mementos throughout his career. And be interesting to see what makes it to the auction block and what some of these Cal Ripken Jr. items go for. Very popular player, known obviously for the inning and game streak, and some interesting items. Little League jersey, we've seen what some of these jerseys of players have gone before, and here you have a Little League jersey. Recently, we've had Kobe's high school jersey, and Golden's just right now on an incredible run.
A great success.
The Ben Baller Chrome edition of Topps Baseball is starting to become live as people receive their shipments. When you're listening to this episode, I probably have received my first box out of two. I've got two. I got one through, again, the Montgomery 582 Club, and one in a lottery process. And so not a cheap box, even direct at about $270 after taxes. And, they're going for about $650 on the secondary market a piece. And so I definitely will not be opening either one of my boxes, not even a thought. Sure, you always love to rip stuff, but not for what they cost and what they're going for, close to 300% of introductory price. So Those two will be making their home elsewhere and shipped to their new destination when I move those. But again, I've just done a lot better moving wax rather than opening it, and I'm continuing that trend with that product as well. Beckett Media and Collectible Insurance Services have struck a deal to insure inventories listed on their Beckett Marketplace. And so if you have, if you're a member and a subscriber and you have inventory listed on the Beckett site, you can have a get a quote from CIS to have those cards and your collection insured. I don't know all the specs. I don't know if it's only the cards listed on there or if that just opens the door to get your entire inventory at your house insured. Not a bad idea, smart on Beckett's part. And for those that, you know, I know we've talked about this on Hobby Quick Hits, but you know, you should definitely, if you have a decent inventory of cards that are valuable, you know, one option is obviously to store it in an off-site location, a vault, a bank deposit box, a safety deposit box, or if you have it at home, a still safe, a safe or something, a fireproof thing. But you also should ensure your collection if it's of that kind of significance. And many insurance companies have add-on riders. You know, what I do besides that too is I video a lot of my inventory every few months, and you know, on my phone, where that I usually have it on me, and that way I can document what is in my possession as long and insure it. So this is another way to insure your collectibles to you know, in case, God forbid, something terrible should occur.
At Farmers Insurance, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
Pastime Marketplace offers a line of durable graded card cases made for collectors who want high-quality graded card storage that is virtually indestructible. Their cases are waterproof, dustproof, airtight, and designed to protect your valuable collection. Check them all out at www.pastimemarketplace.com. Protect your best with the best. And remember, to save 10% off your total order, use the promo code SCN10. That's capital S, capital C, capital N, 10 for 10% off your total order at pastimemarketplace.com. Happy to have my next guest on the One of One Card Shop guest line. It's not very often. Actually, it's the only time I can say I've known this next guest my whole life. it's my own father, Mr. Barry Newman, joining us today. We're going to talk a little bit. You know, he grew up in Brooklyn, and we're going to talk a little bit about cards back then, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and all stuff relating to that time period. It's not all the time you get to get those experiences in that background. And so happy to have him on. Pops, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and I'm happy to be here. I'm glad and happy that you invited me, John.
No problem. So this is actually the first time you've been in the studio office. What do you think? It's not very big.
No, but it has everything. It has everything. So, very nice.
Thank you. So you were born 1938 in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Correct.
Now, you know, became a Brooklyn Dodger fan. Now, they're Yankee fans in Brooklyn. How come it was the Dodgers over the Yankees for you?
Well, the area where I lived, it was all Dodger fans. There was no Yankee. It was all the Brooklyn Dodgers. And how it came to be, I was between 11 and 12 years old. my cousin and I, which he didn't live too far from me, we were pretty close. We hung out together. And anyway, we used to make money, you know, selling newspapers or something, just to make the spending money to be able to get into Ebbets Field. At that time, to sit in the center field bleachers, it was 60 cents.
Yeah.
And a hot dog was, if I remember, maybe 10 or 15 cents. But, yeah. it was really exciting. Totally exciting. Yeah.
So how many Brooklyn Dodger games would you say you went to in your whole life in Ebbets Field?
Oh my Lord. I would say close to 1,000, easy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, every time there was a game, we'd go. On the weekends, we'd hang out together, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to get you in trouble here, I think. Did you always buy a ticket? I remember a story where you snuck in a couple times.
In Ebbets Field?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember.
I thought when I was younger, you told me you snuck in a couple times. That's all right. Maybe you don't remember yourself. The FBI is not listening to the show that I'm aware of. You've been to a lot of Dodger games.
Oh, yes.
So you've seen not just the legendary Brooklyn Dodgers, but even the visiting teams.
Talk about
some of the players you got to watch.
Okay. As far as the Brooklyn Dodgers, sitting in the center field bleachers, I mean, I can see Ferrello in right field, Snyder in center field, Gene Hermansky in left, Cox at third, Reese at short, Robinson at second, Gil Hodges at first, Campanella behind the plate, and one of the most famous pitchers, Erskine, on the mound.
Yeah. But how about some of the team? How about some of the other famous? You know, you got to see the Brooklyn Dodgers all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the other, like the teams they played, some of the famous players.
So Alvin Dock, Stan Musial, Willie Mays. I was really fortunate. It was really a treat, and it was exciting. And I saw all the big players. I mean, let me see who else. Whitey Lockman at first for the Giants.
Now, did you ever see Mano with the Yankees? Did they ever? They only played in the World Series, though.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure I seen Mantle. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you go to Yankee Stadium at all for Yankee?
In my whole lifetime, I was there maybe twice. That was it. I was never to the Polo Grounds.
So never to the Polo Grounds, but to Yankee Stadium a couple of times.
And that's where I saw Mantle and, Maris.
Yeah. So I know you collected cards. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But as far as, like, going to the games, did you ever catch, like, a foul ball or a home run? Well, if you're in center, like a home run or anything?
No, never. No? Never had the pleasure of
getting How about, did you get to interact with any of the Brooklyn Dodgers?
Oh, definitely, John. They had a side street where the limousines, the cars would pull up. And to get into the Ebbets Field, they'd come out of the limousines, and like from me talking to you, they'd shake my hand. I seen them all, Robinson, Hodges. Oh, it was such a treat, and they were so friendly. You wanted an autograph, they would take the time out to sign an autograph for you.
Yeah.
It was really great back then.
A little different than today's baseball that we know, but they were a little more accessible. Memorabilia and stuff, as you know, isn't as valuable then as we know it today.
Right.
So that, you know, they weren't worried about a kid like turning around and selling their autograph.
Well, to give you an example, it was a nickel a pack and it was Tops. You get a slice of bubblegum and five cards. What we used to do with kids, not knowing any better, not realizing that they were going to be valuable in the future. In our bicycles, we used to stick them in the spokes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's...
And in 1952, you were 14 years old, and that 52 Topps Mantle that you probably put in your spokes is worth a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, Yogi Berra,
Now, but you didn't know... You
back
didn't,
then, no.
You didn't know, you know, if you knew then what we know now, you probably would have... You know, you'd be a very rich guy.
Oh, yeah, same thing with the comic books, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing. That was another thing that was pretty popular today, you know.
Yeah.
DC Comics.
Yeah.
But we didn't know that in the future how valuable they were going to be.
So what with your card collection, like where would you get it? How many cards did you have? Did you trade for teams? Like how did you?
Okay. What we did, we had Gordon, who was the proprietor, who had the candy store on a corner right a block from where I lived. And like I said, it was a nickel a pack, and that's where I used to get my cards.
Yeah.
And what we used to do is we used to go near the factory, which was near my house where I lived. We used to toss the cards from the wall or just flip them out of our hand.
Yeah.
And that's how we used to, you know, either win.
It was a game where if you won, you got all the cards, someone else's card.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you didn't have, like, the holders we do now. And so
oh, no, we didn't
You would just put rubber bands around them. Or
put them in a shoebox.
A shoebox, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's just crazy to hear, like, how, you know, it's a different era. You didn't know back then.
Right.
There wasn't intrinsic value. It was more for trade. They call trading cards. They're
right.
trading with
exactly.
them. Playing games. I mean, you I imagine the cards.
And that was the enjoyment we got out of, you know, collecting the cards and tossing them and seeing, you know, if we can win, you know, cards. It was just for the fun.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you're a Brooklyn Dodger guy. Kind of speak to, do you remember when Jackie Robinson made his debut? Being
47, he broke the...
Talk about that time period. How did most fans, you know, did you hear anything derogatory? Were most people, like, welcoming? Did you hear, were there some people who, you know, being a race, being
well,
an issue?
Well, back then, yes, back then, from what I seen, some people were prejudiced. I mean... When he broke the barrier and he was playing in 47, the Ebbets Field, I mean, some people booed him. Some people were throwing things at him. He didn't have it. He wasn't really welcomed. A lot of people were prejudiced back then.
Including Dodger fans themselves?
Yes.
Yeah. When do you think it was where that sort of, I mean, it never went fully away, but when do you think, like, it got better just as he played and people saw... Like, he was a good, player and a decent guy.
He was a player that no matter what team they played, he kept a pitcher on edge. I mean, he was his base stealer.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they couldn't catch him.
Yeah.
I mean, they loved him. I mean, he was an exciting ball player. And I think the people got used to that. And he was a good hitter, too, a good slugger. And people got to like him. And...
He changed minds.
You know,
I'm sure there's some that never did just because of the way they were brought up.
He was a big asset for the team.
Yeah.
I mean, amongst other players. But for a black ball player, he did very good for the Dodgers.
Yep. And so you're 9 years old when he broke the color barrier. Did you realize the significance of this event then or not really at that time?
Oh, well, I didn't really understand all of what was going on, but I couldn't understand why they were booing him, because back then I didn't realize it was because of his race.
Yeah.
But as you get older, you know, and you learn from it, and then I realized it was because he was the first black ball player to come into...
I know you were, you know, you were literally raised by the same person I was with grandma, your mom,
right.
My grandmother. And I remember, you know, being in Brooklyn and grandma telling me, you know, not to see race, that there's good and bad in every race, that
exactly.
not to see color and just judge people by their character. And obviously, if she raised me like that, I know. You were raised the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Some people, not as fortunate, and that's where some of that hatred and stuff comes from. But, you know, there's a guy who, you know, like he said, turned the other cheek and never really reacted to it, kind of just played ball. And eventually some of those people that were probably booing and throwing things came around and he changed, you know, he changed society. I've said this on this very show. He's the guy I look up to, even though he was gone before I was around. But, you know, his significance not only to on the field, but even off the field. And, you know, he's synonymous with not only the Dodgers, but the city of Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to see him. I mean, You know, I'm envious in the fact that you got to see him, you know, live and in the flesh and experience.
I consider myself fortunate and very lucky, being born and raised in that area in 1938 and going through that experience and seeing the colorful, to me, the Brooklyn Dodgers. You know, it's a fact where they won the pennants. They had no problem winning the pennants, but when it came to the World Series,
they couldn't get it done.
They couldn't get it done, except 1955 was the first time they won the World Series, and 2 years later, they devastated Brooklyn by moving out to L.A.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that, Pops, but before, let's talk about that World Series. Did you go to any World Series games?
No.
All right, tougher ticket?
Yeah, I couldn't afford the ticket.
Yeah, and you know, think about this too, of all the games you went to, even today, those ticket stubs are pretty valuable. We talk about cards, but there's a market for ticket stubs. It's too bad you didn't have some of those Ebbets Field ticket stubs. And you know, you talk, before we get into the Dodgers leaving, because I definitely want to get in that. Uh-huh. I know we talked, you know, I've talked to you, not recording, but you know, you said you remember in 1948 you were 10 years old and Babe Ruth passed away. Kind of go back and tell us about that day and what, you know, everything surrounding it.
Okay. I was downstairs with my friends. This was during the day. And we would, like I said earlier, there was a factory that was close to where I lived, the building I lived in, and we used to hang out there and tell jokes and all. And then we heard that people come out of a building saying, "We just heard Babe Ruth passed away."
Yeah.
Babe Ruth passed away. I cried.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though being a Dodger fan, I still like Babe Ruth. And DiMaggio, another key player that I really adored and admired. And even when I played ball, on my uniform I had the number 5, and it was in memory of Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah,
because I cared for him also, I liked him also. But when we heard Babe Ruth passed away, it was devastating. It was a hard day.
Even being a Dodger fan, I mean, Babe Ruth, especially at that time, still was probably the greatest baseball player to ever live. Some argue that it's still the case here in 2020.
Yeah.
And so even being a Dodger fan, just the fact that an icon of the game had died young, you know, he had throat cancer, and you know, it was, a lot of people knew it was coming. It's just when someone's you look up to in that respect, they're larger than life.
Oh yeah.
And then you almost think they're invincible. And then when they're gone and you hear they're gone, you know, even at 10 years old, it hits you like that. Whether you're a Dodger fan, Yankee fan, New York Giant fan, it's still a legend of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Tragically young, you know. Same thing with Lou Gehrig and that. And, you know, I just, it was, you know, not that it's a good thing, but it's nice to hear, you know, people, do you remember, like, general feelings, like people, did you see people very upset? Like, was it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even when they found out Babe Ruth had passed away, even being, like you said, being a Dodger fan, it hurt us. It hurt most of the people, at least in the area where I lived. People felt that.
Yeah. Well, still being a Yankee, he was part of New York for a long time.
Sure.
A lot of World Series championships.
Oh, yeah.
And you can appreciate greatness and greatness.
In fact, when we used to talk about baseball in general, you know, with my friends, we used to talk about all the other teams, you know, the ball players, you know. I mean, back then you had ball players that were all around ball players.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Pete Rose. I mean, you had beautiful ball players back then. We used to talk about Ted Williams.
Yeah.
You know.
We're going to step aside for a quick break, but we'll be back more with my dad. Hey folks, tired of going to the retail store and finding the wax shelves cleaned out bare? I've got the answer for you, and that answer is Hotbox Cards. They offer a monthly subscription service at a great price level. What's better than getting a box of sports cards on your doorstep every month? Not a whole lot, and these boxes don't cost a whole lot. Let me tell you what's in each and every hot box. 3 relic or auto cards, 3 unopened hobby packs, 50 bonus cards featuring stars, rookies, semi-stars, inserts, and parallels. And 1 in every 5 boxes has a red hot envelope with a surprise card. They also honor expired redemptions with a comparable item. So there's no worry about getting that old redemption card with nothing to show for it. Check them out at www.hotboxcards.net and put in promo code SCNATION, SCNATION all in caps, to save even a little bit more money. Sports Card Nation is back with more from my pops. Did you have a favorite player? Like, was there a favorite player outside of the Dodgers that you sort of...
Joe DiMaggio
was
he was
your favorite,
one of my favorites. Like I said, when I played ball and I was a jock, I played a lot of ball, softball, baseball. But baseball, when I played for the Long Island Star Journal or the, CYO.
CYO.
I had the two best coaches, and they taught me well. And I had a full dress uniform from the cap right down to my socks. And I always had the number 5.
Yeah, that I knew, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was for Joe DiMaggio.
In respect for Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah. And here you are, a Dodger fan, but yeah. you like Joe DiMaggio yeah. enough. If I remember right, 5 on the Brooklyn Dodgers was Ferrillo.
No, Ferrillo was 6.
6. So who was 5?
5 was, I think, the catch of Wayne Bilardi.
Bilardi,
I think
okay.
was 5.
Why I thought I got I was off by
no,
one.
No, that's okay. That's
so you weren't wearing it for Wayne Bilardi.
It was all respect for Joe DiMaggio.
All right, well, Wayne Bilardi would be sorry to hear that, but at least you root for him during the game as a Dodger fan.
Oh yeah.
So who I know? I mean, it's hard to pick one. You talked about getting to meet these guys up close and in person.
Oh, I met
Was there any of them? I know we don't like to talk bad about, you know, were they all very friendly? Was there some that maybe weren't as friendly?
No, back then people were a lot closer. I mean, that's the way it was back then, John. It wasn't just family, but even people in general.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the ones that I've been greeting, they stuck out their hand. Or, you know, hit me on the shoulder or hit my cap. I'd wear a ball cap back then. They were all very friendly. All very friendly.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, 55. Let's talk about the World Series when Brooklyn won its mm-hmm. first World Series. Oh. What was the feeling like in Brooklyn?
I mean, you can hear the yelling, people hitting pots, pans. I mean, it was the first World Series that they won.
Yeah.
You know, all that time. And people were just, excited. That's all you heard, I mean, for weeks, for months, how they won the World Series. Yeah. It was a big treat back
just
then.
Just one big party in Brooklyn?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you go to any, like, the parades or so? Were you able to go to any of that?
No, I didn't. As far as my memory, no, I never went to any parades. But like I say, even in my neighborhood, people were out front. Oh, I mean, yelling, screaming, horns blowing.
Yeah.
Oh, the only thing was missing was the ticker tape.
Yeah.
No ticker tape, but the horns blow. It was a joy.
And you go from that, you know, top of the mountain feeling in 55, and literally 2 years later, they're gone. Talk about, you know, that was sort of like it was kind of brewing. It led up to that. I mean, I'm sure you heard the rumors that, you know, they wanted to move to the West Coast. But until it really happens, it doesn't hit you.
Right, right.
You know, kind of speak to, you know, everything that led up to that. And then when they finally decided to move.
Yeah. Well, like you said, John, which is true, there was a lot of talk, you know, beforehand that they were thinking about. O'Malley was thinking about going there, making more money. But like you said, and when the time did come, it was a shock. It devastated Brooklyn. I mean, it took the heart right out of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It devastated the borough. I mean, it was never the same.
Yeah.
when the Dodgers left.
And for those listening that don't know, you know, Ebbets Field was eventually knocked down, and it's now an apartment complex. Yep. Is Ebbets, where the old Ebbets Field is. And, I mean, you know, O'Malley's not a fan favorite, obviously, in the borough of Brooklyn. I mean, people, talk about people. I know you said people were crying, literally crying in the streets.
Oh, and, yeah. Oh, people, it was devastating, John. It actually really took the heart out of Brooklyn. People weren't talking. They no emotion. I mean, they were stunned. They couldn't believe that this was happening.
Yeah.
They couldn't believe it.
Yeah. And so what, I mean, as a Dodger fan, did you just go and root for L.A.? What did you do as far as...
I was still a Dodger fan. And in my heart, I'm still a Dodger fan. Thinking back for the conversation that we're having now, I'll always remain a diehard Dodger fan.
Yeah.
You know. But I was still voting because the ball players, they were still intact. And then through the years, you know, it started to change. But what was hard is to keep track of, you know, them moving to L.A., you know, and moving out of the neighborhood. It wasn't the same thing, John. So in a way, you sort of lose it because you can't keep intact with them, you know, as close as you did before.
So they move out. How soon, I don't know if you can answer this question, but how soon did they tear Ebbets Field down after they moved?
It would. I'd have to guess on that, John. But I would say anywhere maybe from maybe 6 months to a year, maybe.
So it was
maybe
fairly quick?
Yeah.
Do you remember going like to the stadium even when the team was gone and just thinking about, you know, them not being there?
When I heard they moved out and the day they moved out, that was the last time I went to Ebbets Field, John. Yeah,
that was just it.
That was it. Yeah. That was the last
time. So in 1957... You were 19 years old when they moved out. Hey, born in 38.
Yeah.
So what was your personal, like, how did it affect you? Were you,
I was heartbroken, John. I was heartbroken because, number one, there was no more Ebbets Field. There was no more looking down from center field and seeing Ferrello, Snyder, all them baseball players, them wonderful ball players that they were, all around ball players, couldn't see that anymore.
Yeah.
Couldn't see that.
So you didn't become a Yankee fan? Or
no.
What do you think? Did most Brooklyn Dodger fans just follow them sort of L.A. as far as fandom goes?
Well, maybe some of them did, but when the Mets came in the process of playing ball.
Yeah, which was about in 62. Was the Mets. So 5 years after the Dodgers
Most left, of the, I think the Dodger fans become Met fans.
Yep. And they actually brought back a lot of you know, Gil Hodges became a manager.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And you know, and they incorporated some of the colors, even the NY was an homage to the Dodgers and so, you know,
and a lot of the ball players at the time they were in Ebbets Field, when Ebbets Field was still there, they lived not too far from where I lived. They lived in the neighborhood, Ridgewood, Bay Ridge.
Yeah. So did you ever run, speaking of that, so you bring that up, did you ever run into any of the Dodgers players like in plain clothes anywhere, like a store?
No, never had the opportunity, John.
Yeah.
The only time I met them and actually shook their hand or received an autograph was when they were coming to the ballpark and they got out of the limousine. And we was in line. There was two lines, and they just walked down the center, and they just shake your head. Oh, it was unbelievable, unbelievable. Yeah. It was a dream come true.
Yeah, and you so going back to Jackie Robinson with that situation, he comes out too. Were most people friendly and nice, or did you ever hear some in those situations?
No, once he started playing ball and. For what they really see, what they saw him as a ball player, an all-around ball player, he done a lot for the Dodgers, and the people realized how much of an asset he was to the team.
He changed perceptions and minds, and
he did.
You know, you read a lot about him, and you know, he took a lot more abuse on away games. And, you know, I don't know, you know, Pee Wee Reese became one of his biggest, allies on the team. And Pee Wee Reese was from the South.
Kentucky.
And, you know, that area is not, at the time anyway, was not known as being very accepting of you know, African-American people just in general, let alone breaking the color. And Pee-wee knew, you know, that he was actually going to upset some of his own, you know, folks where he was from. But he knew it was the right thing to do. Yeah.
And the teammates knew, and they saw what he was going through.
Yeah.
And he dealt with a lot. I mean, God bless the man. He dealt with a lot, being the first black man to break the color barrier.
Yeah.
And like I said, he was a big asset for the team.
Yeah. And the city of Brooklyn and society. Yeah. I mean, even after his playing days were over, he did a lot of community stuff.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't realize he was actually traded to the Giants. And
he didn't want to
play. No. That was like the rival. And he retired rather than wear that uniform. And that shows you the dedication and his belief and how strong his beliefs are in certain things. And, you know, it was something I remember as a little kid when I found that out, and I just said, man, he's willing to like give up the game he loves because he just can't do that.
Right.
And that really one of the things that sticks out.
He loved everything about the Dodgers.
Yep. And so he was loyal.
Yeah.
I think people, you know, learned to love the ones that didn't from the start, learned to love them and accept them.
Right.
And he's done a lot even outside the game.
Yeah, one other thing I want to tell you, John, is I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this, but he had something to do with Chock Full of Nuts, the chain.
Yeah, he was like the I don't know if he was CEO. The CEO.
Yeah,
and I know, I'm sure he was in commercials and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
He was very successful, even. I mean, he actually died a month before I was born, but he was very successful. Out even after his career was over, it was he was a smart guy, you know.
Oh,
went to UCLA, and you know, like you said, to get all this kind of abuse and just kind of let it, you know, turn the other cheek and not respond, and I think he changed a lot of people's mind. I think, and he opened that up for you know, eventually Larry Doby in the American League,
Campanella,
and then Campanella.
We're gonna take another fast break. But when we come back, more from my father, Barry Newman.
Let me tell you about Iron Sports Cards and Collectibles. They're your number one source for all your PSA and now SGC submissions. They offer various service levels at the lowest prices around. They even provide the card savers your cards need to be submitted at no extra charge. Their elite status helps improve turnaround times, and their chat rooms keep you abreast of your subs and the status of your cards. What are you waiting for? Contact Rob on Facebook on Iron Sports Card Group. That's Iron Sports Card Group on Facebook. Or get a hold of Rob on Twitter at Iron Sports Cards. All one word, at Iron Sports Cards. They'll take care of you.
Sports Card Nation is back with me and my dad.
A lot of people don't know this, and I don't even know if you know this. Campanella in 1942 was offered a tryout with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
No, I didn't know
and
that.
And he was all set to go, and he was sort of pipelined to be the person that breaks the color barrier. And the commissioner at the time, Mountain Landis, kind of got in the Pirates' ear and said to cancel this tryout. And they succumbed to the commissioner's pressure to not do it. And so Campanella never got that opportunity. The Pirates canceled the tryout. And
so it was probably meant to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, Campanella, you know, eventually he wound up being a teammate at Jackie's on Brooklyn, but right. it could have been Campanella first rather than Robinson first if it wasn't for Landis, who was reportedly, for lack of a better way of saying it, a racist kind of commissioner. He was against it. He got in the pits. He made a couple calls and said, I appreciate it if you would cancel that try when he got wind of it. So,
but you're right. I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
I recently found that out myself. Huh. So you know, I'm sure a lot of people do know about it, and some don't. So there might be some listening to this that learned something there as well, like you just did. And so the rest is history. You know, Robinson does it in 47. They win a World Series in 55, and then just 2 years later. They're gone, and you know,
it was a shock.
Yep. And so, but at least you got, you know, you have all those memories. You can never.
I consider myself one of the lucky kids at that era, that time.
Yep. And so, you know, history, you can't rewrite it. It never will go away, and you got to experience it. And I got the memories. Yeah, and live in color, and that's cool. And you know, you got to meet these guys and handshake
but
and
you know,
autographs.
I got to say, in comparison to the way they play ball, the ball players today, and the way it was back then it was for the sport.
Yeah.
Today, my opinion, it's mostly for the business, for the money.
Well, baseball, all sports are business now. You know, sports cards are a business now where they weren't then. I mean, it's just a lot of business. It's the era.
Yeah, it's changed.
It's the era we live in. And,
it's changed.
What are you going to do? So I got to ask you got some autographs. I mean, whatever happened, what do you think happened to them all?
That I couldn't tell you, John. Like the same thing with the baseball cards, you know.
Yeah.
I had shoebox upon shoebox, but in moving I can't exactly
just
tell you what
lost,
happened.
Lost in
right.
In
but I do want to mention, and we worked on this together.
Yeah.
I do my artwork, cartooning, and I have the face of the Brooklyn Bum. I got it. I copied it from one of the yearbooks.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what year, but it was for one of the yearbooks. And we sent away for autographs, and we got authentic autographs.
I still have my book. It's over there. You still have yours, I'm assuming.
I got it on a wall. I got it in a frame, and I got the Dodger signatures.
Yeah.
These are authentic autographs. Yep.
So, and my dad's referring in the late 80s. I remember I was still 16, 17. I was in high school. Me and my dad would write to all the retired Brooklyn Dodger players, telling them what they meant. More obviously to my dad, who watched them play. I only heard the stories, but we wrote a letter together, basically saying, We remember them.
Right.
We appreciate everything they did for Brooklyn. We included a self-addressed stamped envelope and some index cards, 3x5 index cards.
Correct.
And we asked them, you know, we knew they were busy. We were very, I mean, we wrote a letter. It wasn't just like, sign this, please. It was very personable and spoke to.
We gave a little bit of a background.
Yeah. And if, you know, in their time, if they could signed a card and send it back, and
we
got, I mean, almost everyone responded, and many of them, you remember this, Pop, even sent letters back that I still have in the book where they,
beautiful,
you know, many of the players responded back, thank you for remembering like an old Dodger.
Sure,
you
sure.
don't know what that means to an old guy.
Sure, especially like knowing they moved out of Brooklyn.
Yeah,
you know?
They thought they were forgotten.
That's
and so
right.
many of them actually wrote correspondence back thanking us for remembering them.
Right.
Some of them sent business cards, if you remember, of businesses they were running.
Yep.
And they signed the business cards. And I remember, I think it was Johnny Schmidt sent a newspaper, like a copy of a newspaper article about him and signed that. And so they were very, a lot of them, if my memory serves me correct, responded very quickly and sent stuff back and wrote letters, and it was fun to do that with you.
It was exciting, Joe.
You have a book, I have a book. Yeah. I think earlier this year I actually videoed me going through that book and I posted it on social media, and you know, I try to do that every once in a while too. Right. So you know, we don't forget that past.
And, it was exciting. It was a pleasure. One other thing I'd like to mention, John, is I don't remember what year it was, but I think it was for the pennant. The Dodgers were playing the Giants.
Yeah.
And it was the shot heard around Bobby the world.
Bobby Thompson, Ralph Branca. Yeah.
I mean, that was another incident where it was a shock.
Yeah.
It was a shock.
Yeah.
But, you know.
That's baseball,
that's
right?
You know, that's baseball. Anything can happen.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, like the saying goes, sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you, right?
Yeah.
That was one time the bear got the Dodgers. But, that's a classic moment in baseball history.
Oh, yeah.
You watch, you know, any shows that they always show that clip. And, but, you know, at least you got, you know, they won a World Series. It wasn't like they moved without ever getting it. And you always have those memories of meeting those guys and getting autographs and watching them play that many times, you know.
But I got to tell you, it was so exciting back then. And especially being young as I was, it was still a thrill. I mean, it's something I'll always remember.
Yeah. Well, Pops, I appreciate you sharing those memories with the listeners out there and me. You know, I know you're passionate about it. You got choked up when we're talking about Babe Ruth and, but, you know, baseball is, you know, like you said, it was a different game, you know, in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And then slowly you got into free agency became a thing in baseball, and Curt Flood, and
it's changed,
some of the money got involved, and
it's changed.
I mean, it's still baseball. It's still a national pastime.
Oh, yeah.
It's still got that lure, and if you're a fan at that age, you know, you don't just give it up. And you know, it's still going to be baseball.
You take the good with the bad.
Yeah, yeah. So, Pops, you know, I love you.
I love you too, John.
Thanks.
And I want to tell you something, John.
Go ahead.
You made my day today, because all I have is memories. And with you inviting me over to do this interview, it bring up the past. And I get a thrill even when I was able to talk to you about it, and it's thrilling for me. It's thrilling for me.
Yeah, well, I'm glad.
And I love you for inviting me over.
You know,
the interview.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad you did it, and I think people who are listening will appreciate it.
I hope they do.
Yeah, no, I think they will. And you know, it's not often you get to hear some of those stories from someone who lived it literally in the moment, and you know, I think it'll be appreciated, and there are probably some that may be listening who are your age or even a little bit younger, and they'll bring back memories for them,
which I hope
as well.
I hope that it does.
Yeah.
I hope it does.
This is normally the part of the interview where I have the guests give out all their like social media and their website. You still have a flip phone, so we're not going to do that, but I love you, and I got to get out of here.
Okay, and I love you too, John.
All right.
And you made my day.
You're welcome. All right.
The Star Stock Selling Platform is live and booming, quickly becoming the premier sports card marketplace. They aim to be the fastest, most efficient platform to buy or sell your cards. No insertion fees. They do all the work, cards are safely secure in their vault, and their 5% sales commission is one of the lowest in the industry. They are accepting rookie and prospect cards, and now also accepting graded cards. Go check them out at starstock.com.
Oh, I know the chunky that left these chunkies! Newman! Open the door, Newman. I know you're in there.
Hello, Jerry. All right. It's time for Newman's Rambling, where I select one question I get each week and answer it on the air.
John, you seem like an astute man.
Thank you, Mr. Walken.
Maybe you can help explain something to me.
Well, I'll give it my best shot.
All right. Quiet week sort of question-wise. I didn't get as many as I usually do, but I did get this one from way of Instagram from KGCards12. And KGCards12 asks, John, you seem to interview a lot of people from the New York City area. You yourself are from there as well. Is that intentional? And if so, or even if not so, why do you do that? Good question, I guess. It does seem like I have a lot of people from the New York City area on. I'd be lying if I said it was intentional, well, sort of. I'll say it's indirectly intentional. What I mean by that is, you know, a lot of the artists from the TOPS 2020 project are New York City based. Not all of them, but a good percentage of them. And I've had a lot of those on. And, you know, a lot of the other folks as well are from New York City. I'll be honest with you, the show does very well in that demographic. Now, while I don't do that intentionally, it's, you know, it is a nice perk to probably have people from New York City on when your show does well in New York City. But I'd be lying if I said I was smart enough to on purpose do that. But it just, you know, it's New York City's, you know, the Mecca. I'm biased, I like to think. A lot of people doing good things there. A lot of, you know, like I said again, a lot of the artists, Craig Kreinler, is from there as well. And so a lot of people I've interviewed seem to be there. Today, my dad, you know, even though he lives here now in central New York, obviously originally from Brooklyn as well. So I'm not going to apologize for that. I'd like to probably take more credit and say that it was really strategic and premeditated. It really wasn't, other than the fact that the people I wanted to have on the show are a lot of the people I want to have on the show are from there. But it doesn't matter where you're from. I don't look at that as a prerequisite to be a guest. But it is, you know, it's a good question. You know, it's funny, I never really thought about it in those terms until you asked. And so next week we're scheduled to have Brandon Steiner on. Guess where he's from. So I don't know, it's just one of those things. So you know, you don't have to be. We've had also people not from this country on. We've had people from Britain, Australia, and so that, you know, we like to. There, you know, the Sports Card Nation is really worldwide. It's for Sports Card World, and no matter where you're from, however you're hobbying, enjoy it. Like I always say. Good question. Thanks, KG Cards 12.
One of One Card Shop offers a tremendous breaking experience, great customer service, and they're constantly pulling fire. Steve and his family take care of you like one of their own and treat you right. Anyone can break, but no one treats you like one of one. Come check them out on Instagram at @one_of_one_card_shop. For all the hot breaks, get a gold mailer headed your way.
All right, time to give away the weekly $25 free break credit to 101 Card Shop. Steve does a lot of awesome breaks, and here's your chance to get $25 free. We had a lot of entrants this week, a pretty good turnout. We used the retweet draw, and the winner has been selected. And without further ado, the winner is at Carter W. Carter 69, William Carter on Twitter. Congratulations, William. I will reach out to you. If you don't reach out to me first by hearing this, you have won $20 free break credit from 101 Card Shop.
The eerie, inescapable truth. People really win.
On SCNP.
Well, that's going to do it for episode 95 of the Sports Card Nation. First off, thank you. We wouldn't be here without you giving of your time. We appreciate it. And, you know, I hope you enjoyed my dad going back in the DeLorean a little bit there and reminiscing and bringing us all back to a time that probably, if you're listening to this, you weren't around back then, and kind of letting us get a glimpse into to life, into baseball, cards back then. And I really, you know, I'm biased, but I enjoyed having him on, and I know, you know, he really had fun doing it. And, you know, that reminds me, too. You know, you only get one family. You know, share those stories, even if they're not recorded like I did with my dad today. But talk about those things. You know, to see my dad light up when talking about it made his day, said it did. And, you know, just talking with maybe even an older relative about what it was like, or, you know, how was this, or what did you do back then? I mean, number one, it shows you care. Number two, they may enjoy talking about that, and might give them, you know, some pep in their step, and, you know, encouragement. And it's great to share those stories and pass them down from one generation to the next. I know I'm going to look back at this episode very fondly, maybe one of my favorites, if not the one. But, you know, it's something we should all, you know, share our family stories, histories. And I'm glad I was able to share some of that with you, and my dad was able to share some of that with you. But definitely, you know, my advice is to get all that information, get those stories, you know, catalog it, dialogue it, whatever, you know, just, you know, you they're worth more than any dollar sign you can put on them. A couple other programming notes. Episode 100, we're 5 episodes away. It's approaching. It's going to be the first ever live Sports Card Nation. It's going to be on Saturday. There will be no Friday show. It's going to be live Saturday, October 31st. No official time yet, but I'm going to tentatively schedule it for 1 p.m. Eastern. It's, again, going to be live. My guests will be Brody the Kid, Dr. Jim Beckett, and Drew Herndon from Let Me Get That Podograph. It's going to be a different show. It's going to be live. We're going to give away a lot of stuff. Pastime Marketplace is going to give away a couple cases. I'm giving away $100 in for your PayPal account, and there'll be much, much more. We're going to give away a Mike Trout Stitch jersey and more to be announced. Cards, going to be probably one of our biggest giveaway events. Probably our last big giveaway for a while. You know, I don't know if we're going to, when we'll, you know, we'll always give stuff away, don't get me wrong, but nothing of this impact. And so stay tuned for details. It's going to be a lot of fun. And speaking of live podcast, Hobby Hotline, every Saturday at 11 a.m. On YouTube and Facebook and Periscope. And, you know, it's kind of, we call it Hobby Hotline 2.0. Been some changes. It's not really recent now. We've kind of been a month out from that. A lot of new faces, young faces, old faces, just like the hobby, encompass everybody. And that's what we want to do with the show. Bring different perspectives from Brody the Kid to Dr. Beckett, cover all the age groups and all the genres, you know, Val with NASCAR and non-sports we do, and when we can. And we, you know, we want to be for everyone. Again, it's your show. You call in and set the topics. But, you know, every week you're going to see a really, you know, three or four new people each and every week. And that's really where we wanted to go with that show. And so, you know, we're having a lot of fun doing it. We'll keep going. And, you know, it's about you. Call in on that show. Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern. And one more shameless plug before we wrap it up officially. If you're listening to this show on release date, Friday, tomorrow, Saturday, the 26th, I'll be on Jeremy Lee's Sports Cards Live show late at night, at least on the East Coast, 10 p.m. Eastern. Me and Jeremy is going to chop it up, you know, no holds bar. Like I tell anyone that wants to interview me, if they do, ask me anything. I'm a pretty honest and direct guy. I've always been that way. I think it plays better. You know, like my grandfather said, if you tell the truth, you never have to remember the lie you made up. And so that's how I try to my mantra, if you will. And Jeremy, if you haven't seen Sports Cards Live, check that show out. Great guest. You know, I get complimented on my guest list. He's right there as far as guest lists go. And, great interviewer. I mean, his interviews, you think mine are long. He's very in-depth, very thorough. A lot of fun, too. I call it cutting it up. And I've watched the other guests on the show, just the banter, and it's just a good time, an honest time. And I'm actually looking forward to it. Check us out Saturday the 26th, 10 p.m. Eastern, on YouTube, Facebook. I'm not sure what else he's on, but I usually watch on YouTube and or Facebook. It'll be episode 49 for him. So I'm excited to do it. Hopefully you tune in as well. So with that being said, I picked a little song to play us out. I thought it was appropriate for this episode.
I have a lot to learn from my old man.